Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 42. As a person who enjoys holding court down the pub, regaling my friends with some funny anecdote, Ashley was the perfect fiancée. She always did something that gave me a story. And of course, that next bank holiday weekend, the Lorette de Mar saga got a damn good telling. So we began the bank holiday weekend with a few drinks out on the Friday, and then we ended up out. Betty and Irene were my excellent companions for what would become 4 nights out on the trot. Actually, I think I was their companion. Either way, the three of us went the whole weekend through. The Saturday night was given over to a roller derby team social night. Just a standard night out in town. Drinking, bitching, dancing and selfies. We brought our own party, our own atmosphere, to any establishment we descended upon. And I was loving nights out like this, where I could flip from group to group. But I'd find myself hanging out with the likes of Mila, Betty, Irene and Erin. Pat and Sam were more Ashley's people. And while we both got on with everyone, it was clear we had our own preferences when it came to our teammates. It worked out kind of nicely, you know, giving us both friends and space away from the relationship. To be individuals and not just two halves of a whole. But when we were in couple mode, honestly, we could be a delight, bouncing off each other and really complimenting one another. We attended Ash's company's 10-year anniversary celebrations, and it was the grandest of venues. Sometimes those few hours of having the most polished version of Ashley on my arm were totally worth the hours of stress leading up to the event, negotiating the limit to our lateness, or after midnight when Ashley didn't turn into a pumpkin, just a hungry drunk who had no intention of letting any night end. Well, that and my love of any occasion that allows me to bust out my tuxedo, of course. And I do mean it when I say I loved any excuse to level up my outfits. You know, bench coaching at roller derby was a perfect opportunity. I was the dapperest coach you ever did saw. Waistcoat, tie, the whole works. Even tailored shorts for those days when it felt like the sports hall itself was sweating. I took my job very seriously and therefore I dressed accordingly. I also decided that, okay, that time I bleached my entire head blonde was a bad idea. But what about a few highlights? You know, as if I'd caught the sun a little bit. That sounded like a good idea. One home dye highlight kit later, and a bit of a dodgy quiff if I'm honest, I ended up looking like an iced gem, or a really gay version of Tintin. But I thought I was pulling it off, sort of, almost entirely thanks to my newfound confidence. You know, with this new grin on my face, I could handle a dodgy hairdo no problem at all. And I did, I felt so much more confident in everyday life. You know, people commented on how much happier I seemed, how my energy had changed. My job was still up in the air, but I'd done what I always did. I put my best foot forward and hoped it would be enough. Now, supermarkets like mine, they love to do awards for employees. You know, instead of giving us a pay rise. We get to vote for each other, and for once, the idea is the right people get recognised, instead of the manager's favourite. You know, those good eggs that always seem to get overlooked because they're quiet or they just don't kiss ours. My vote went to Jane, a lady who had been at our shop since the day it opened. She was the entire shop's grandma, mum or mad auntie. Whoever you were, Jane played a role for you. And if you couldn't find it, Jane could. If you didn't know it, Jane probably did. One of these days, Jane will log into her training without needing to call me, and she will become one of the very few people on earth I could not utter a single criticism of. Jane had got my vote for the last 3 years, if I'm honest. And for the last 2 years, everyone else had agreed with me. So we all strolled along to our morning meeting, fully expecting Jane to be announced as the winner. Business as usual. Except, as we stood there, Haz and Maz pointed out that we normally knew who'd won by now, being in HR and all. And Haz normally sorted out the flowers and the gifts and stuff. She felt slightly put out. You know, as nosy HR people, we did not like not being in the know. And then they announced the winner. And everybody stared at me. I'd won. Colleagues, colleague of the year. I will tell you now, it was a rare moment of genuine speechlessness. I was chuffed to bloody bits. The lovely comments that people had submitted with their votes had me blinking furiously and trying to swallow the enormous lump in my throat. People make places for me. They always have. And that's why I'd stuck around this particular place as long as I had. And if I hadn't been sure I wanted to survive this redundancy saga, this had put an end to that. There were weeks yet to wait to know if the colleague's colleague of the year would still actually be working here when the year ends. But I figured, this has to help my cause, right? Now my birthday month approaches, and the sporting gods have delivered me the gift of Euro 2016, for which Wales have actually qualified. My little Welsh heart is as hopeful as it can be that Bale and Ramsey will deliver a tournament of triumph for us at the first time of asking. Scotland and England are in it too, which means that country rivalries can commence once more. I mean, all the banter, which is never quite as good-natured as the rugby banter, but still, it's a rare moment to indulge in these rivalries. I've got my shirt ready. No need to go mad. No need to go over the top, I think. That is until I pull onto my driveway to be confronted with the St. George Cross, the flag of England, flying from my next-door neighbour's house. It's actually very close to our house, and I am concerned people might assume I'm English. And if you ask me, that is worse than being misgendered. Just saying. I can't be letting this go unanswered. I march into the house, and by the time Ashley comes home, I've ordered two flags, sizes not entirely sure of, and now I'm searching eBay for inflatable sheep, inflatable dragons, leeks, daffodils. Ashley is trying to talk me out of the inflatables, and I do see her many, many good points. So I strike a deal. One condition. If we, Wales, our tiny little country, make it to the final of the Euros, I am allowed to not only buy an enormous inflatable dragon, but to go on the roof and put it up. Ashley agrees. I'm not saying she's got no faith in the Welsh team, but she agreed quite quickly. The flags arrive. Thankfully, the sizes aren't too crazy. So I hang one out of the window and feel very pleased with my patriotic pride. The next day, I drive home, pull onto the driveway, ready to admire my flag in contrast to theirs. But now there are two England flags. This larger St. George cross actually has the word England written across it. Are they worried they'll forget it's their flag, I think? Well, now I'm glad I've ordered two flags. So out goes the other one. This is flag war. Now, if you've ever been to Northern Ireland, you'll know that there is no such thing as too many flags. And my neighbours clearly agreed with them. Because they added another flag. Right, this is serious now. It's time to start mucking about. Straight on the internet and I order a giant flag. And I do mean giant. It covers over a quarter of our house. And if I don't hang it right, we're in danger of living in complete flag darkness for a month. So I'm out there, busy, rearranging my flag display to accommodate the giant one when Ashley pulls up onto the driveway. She appears to be more than a little perturbed that I am on the roof of the porch, which is small, tiled, and very steep. And as she gets out of the car, it's making noises that don't make anyone feel very confident about its structural integrity. I offer an alternative solution to my hanging problems, whereby Ashley would hold on to my legs and dangle me out of the window like I'm Michael Jackson's baby. The eye roll was so big, I could see it from up on the porch roof. While the Euros rumbled on, news of a mass shooting at Pulse, an LGBTQ plus venue in Orlando, Florida, came through. 49 people dead. 53 more wounded. It's the deadliest incident of violence against the LGBTQ plus community in American history. Not for the last time, I'm glad I live in a country that doesn't allow people access to weapons to mow me down because they don't like the way I live. Less than a month later, our own gay venues would put up posters of advice. You know, what to do in the event of a firearm or weapon incident. Run and hide advice. It's just a poster, but you stop and picture yourself and your friends deciding to hit up Latin Night in that place, you know, that offers you a little respite from the sometimes daily persecutions you face. A safe haven to let loose a little, relax, and be yourself. I stare at the poster and at the door. Unlikely here, yes. But somebody thinks it's clearly possible. It's just sad when you're glad you live in a place on the grounds it's just not as bad as a lot of other places. It's not wonderful here, but hey, you know, at least it's not illegal for me to exist here. So sometimes, you just don't even want to think about the possible hassle you might incur on a night out. So a house party to the rescue. It had worked for Ash's birthday and it would do just fine for mine. Plus, I really wanted to get the slush puppy machine out again, so home was where the party was. Me and my ice gem Quiff, we had a wonderful time. Drunk and happy, surrounded by my friends. People who actually supported me, wanted me to do well. People who took my birthday celebrations to another level of excited when drunk me let it slip that I'd survived the shake-up at work. No redundancy for me. I was keeping my job and moving on up come September. I had plenty of help in the house when I popped that bottle. It was all coming together. We had the nice house and I was soon going to be able to contribute a little more. And maybe, just maybe, not annoy Ash every month when I'm short for a week or a few days at the end. My parents would be able to give people a job title that actually sounds respectable when they're asked what I'm up to these days. But respectable isn't all it's cracked up to be, you know? And if ever there was an example of this, it was June 2016, and a bit before it. I'm not saying that everyone who voted to leave wasn't respectable, but I am saying the campaigns that encouraged them to vote that way certainly weren't. The discourse that had been clogging our lives, our social media feeds, and polarising everything or everyone was coming to an end. And it seemed that we couldn't be more divided. And when that awful June morning came and the result was announced, it seemed that their work was done. They'd split us whole, stem to stern, 52-48 in favour of exiting Europe. I'm not going to lie to you, this decision of a lifetime, this once-in-a-generation vote and its result left me raging. From identity to history to common bloody sense. I couldn't fathom how abandoning a union and making it up as we went along afterwards was a good idea. Short-term or long-term. These are people, you know, a government, who haven't lifted a finger in the name of climate change. They won't do anything long-term about a problem that has some pretty certain consequences. They won't take a hit now in order to better our futures, you know, our planet. But here we are, willing to experiment with our economy, which has zero certainty of outcome in any direction, least of all a positive one. In case you haven't worked it out yet, our government knows how to benefit its friends. The Oxbridge elite, not satisfied with occupying every level of our systems of power and pocketing the profits in the meantime, seem to have orchestrated an enormous con that will benefit them greatly in the short to medium term. By which point, they'll be rich and gone, so sod everybody else. But hey, we'll have blue passports and we'll have sovereignty and we'll take them back control. And there was something about some money written on a bus. I don't know. What was that again? Fucking Brexit. Let's see how this nonsense plays out. Thank God for sport, especially roller derby. Gotham Roller Girls in particular. New York's finest. The pinnacle of our sport. Champions year after year, and my favourite team. Yes, some of that was because they were called Gotham and they had a cool kit, but actually I'd lost count of how many hours I'd spent poring over Gotham gameplay and staying up to 3 a.m. to watch them play live from the States. My fangirling was real and strong. Not only were Gotham one of the most successful teams, but they had one of the all-time greats on their roster. Every sport has them. You know, those athletes who are just another level up from even the best. I suspect Bonnie Thunders may even come to be the GOAT, roller derby's greatest of all time. There are one or two others in the competition, but Bonnie Thunders is where my money would go. And now Gotham were coming to the UK. I was going to get to see them live in front of my face. And the whole team were putting on a series of coaching clinics. My inner derby nerd could not squeal loud enough. I bought the merch, I screamed along in the crowd as London took on Gotham. But the next morning I was there, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed with my notebook ready to soak up the wisdom that was about to be imparted. I'd been quite well behaved when I'd hit the merch stand the night before, mostly because by the time I reached the front of it, we were just seconds away from first whistle, and I didn't want to miss a single hit. So I hadn't bought the Gotham replica jersey. I didn't have time for all the umming and ahhing about sizes. But when I'd walked in early that morning, they were set it up. Bonnie Thunders herself was manning the store with her partner, OMGWTF. Starstruck would have been an understatement. Ash and Pat nudged me to go on over. I'd brought one of my own t-shirts to get the Gotham skaters to sign. Except I hadn't factored in actually having to talk to them to achieve this. This is the other side of fangirl mode. You know, instead of babbling wildly in front of the person you idolise, I was just frozen to the spot. Until that was, OMGWTF put up a sign that said jerseys were now on sale. Nobody, it seemed, wanted to pack them back up and lug them home to the States. Turns out my desire for a bargain will override any starstruck behaviour. So I dragged Ash and Pat over to the store with me. By the end of the conversation, both of them had signed my shirt and Bonnie herself had fitted me for my jersey, remarking very kindly, in my opinion, on how similar our build was. They posed for photos and generally made my whole damn day. And with Bonnie on board, she went round and got the rest of the team to sign my shirt too. I went home one very pleased fangirl. And then I came right back down to earth when Wales lost to Portugal in the semi-final of the Euros. I sat on the sofa and had a little cry. And then I cried some more when I realised that this meant that there was no way Ashley was going to let me buy an inflatable dragon now. Ashley, I could tell, was relieved about the lack of inflatables in her future. And I could also tell that she was impatient for the flags to come down. We'd lost. Why were they still up? She asked. She didn't understand that I needed to wallow in the loss for a bit, and that the flags had to stay up so that everybody knows that I am very proud of our boyos and how well they played. Still proud in defeat. Yes, Ashley did in fact roll her eyes once more, dear listeners. You are correct. Ashley might have fallen in love with roller derby, but that love had not yet extended to other sports. I lived in hope, though. The town that Ash and I have moved to suits me down to the ground. It's just big enough, but not too big. It's close enough for a jolly to London, and it's full of diversity. In fact, it's one of the most diverse towns in the UK. You know, there's something always going on. It might be a little hipster at times, but all in all, it's a cracking little town. And in the middle of summer, the town really shows itself off with a two-day festival, second only to the Notting Hill Carnival for the scale of free event. The biannual festival was the jewel in the town's crown. We'd not really been in the mix 2 years ago, but we were ready to get amongst it this year. The weather delivered. Nothing but blue skies and sunshine on day one. Ash and I hit the fun fair in the park with our friends and their kids and then settled down for an afternoon in front of the main stage. Irene's mate Lily was down the festival too. Erin and Pat joined for a while. The group ebbed and flowed, but I was going nowhere. You see, I had a bit of a crush on a boy. His name was Joe, and he was a pitch black pug that belonged to Lily. He stole my heart when he stole my cheesy Doritos by putting his entire self in the packet. As displays of dominance go, he was a doozy. Those were definitely his Doritos now. Ash and I had been talking about getting a dog for ages, but we knew Gucci would be deeply unimpressed, so we hadn't. But Dorito Joe, as I was now calling my new best friend, had us seriously dog brooding. Honestly, listeners, it was a beaut of a day. You know, festival fun, friends, so much good weather. And there was still another day to go. We'd planned to spend the Sunday, just the two of us, at the festival. Day two was set to be a little more chilled, laid back, and Ashley wanted to take her time and taste everything on offer down the food truck avenue. You best believe the catering is great in a hipster town. Except Ash was not done with day one. As usual, she took it to her absolute limits, and I think she took Erin along with her. It was very quiet in our house the next morning. I watched the hours tick by, and it was clear. Here were another set of plans cancelled because Ashley is hanging out of her arse. This isn't a one-off. This happens every time. Whether we make plans, have an event, whatever it is that we're looking forward to, Ash can't help but start the celebrations early. The end of the week, the beginning of annual leave, I could guarantee Ashley would start blowing off so much steam the night before that day one would almost always be a write-off. In the past, I'd have sat on the sofa and fumed about it. I'd been living in quite a small world. But now I had friends, acquaintances, a life outside of our relationship. And I had a set of pearly whites that had brought my butch swagger back with a bang. Fuck sitting on this sofa wasting sunshine. I headed out for the River Festival alone, defiantly. And I wanted Ash to know that her absence pissed me off. So I took a series of selfies with my arm around the space that Ash should have been occupying. Passive aggressive much. I bought myself an ice cream. Watched a man with a water jetpack. I'm generally just mooched about, bumping into people whose significant others hadn't got shit-faced the night before. Like Mila and Nat. We bumped into each other and, bless them, they decided to let me be the third wheel. It was really nice to meet Nat, Mila's girlfriend. I'd heard so much about her and it was nice to be able to put a face to the name. And fair play to Mila, it was a very pretty face. Natalie was a bit quiet though. Felt like maybe I'd gatecrashed their afternoon plans. I mean, she was friendly enough, but I don't think Mila and I wrestling like idiots had been quite on her Sunday afternoon agenda. I took my leave and I envied them a little. I was heading home to see how bad a state Ash was in. Days like that made it really hard to understand why social Ash and work Ash were so different. Because work Ashley's gotten herself another promotion on top of expanding her desk. Social Ashley can't manage two events in one weekend. The promotion comes hand in hand with an increase in her commission too. I haven't even gone into my new job and Ashley's already extended the gap between us some more. I'm proud and I'm impressed, but I'm also aware that the power dynamic continues to shift towards Ashley. I felt it in the house selection. I felt it every time Ash had to help me out financially. I felt it on those days when I was so pissed off I wanted to leave. But I realised, financially, I couldn't. If I can't make ends meet here with Ash footing the bill, she's probably right when she says I can't stand on my own two feet. I don't think she ever said those words that directly, but I felt like that was what she was often getting at. And little by little, I began to believe it. And I felt more than a little trapped. Like I had to excuse her behaviour because we had a comfortable life that she provided. And that there was no way I could possibly survive out there on my own. I'd have to go home to my parents. And they're wonderful people, as you know, but dear God, please, no. Having to move back home because I had no other options was the ultimate defeat in my eyes. I've put 9.5 years of my life into this relationship. I can't just be storming out because we're having a rough patch. Ashley knows just how to distract herself from all of this. Retail therapy. On a new scale. And she's right, the promotion deserves a treat. And, well, Ashley's car is not matching up to her new job title, in her opinion. and that's when the Audi brochures start appearing. We're still at an impasse on whether we should buy a house or do the wedding first, so Ashley pivots and buys a brand spanking new Audi. Brand spanking new. As in, entirely paying for the privilege of driving it off the forecourt. I'm aware I'm channeling my dad here, and I channeled him then too, finding myself muttering about depreciation. Quietly though, under my breath. After all, not my money. And as Ash says, now at least I get to drive a nice car when I'm the designated driver. Ooh, lucky me. We really do look the part now though. Big house, fancy new car on the drive. You know, soon the Joneses will be trying to keep up with us, I'm sure. There might be a few things about our life that are niggling at me, but Gucci has no such qualms with living the good life. Well, except for the fact between getting older and my overfeeding, Gucci has turned into a bit of a chunky cat. I'm not sure my arguments that she just has a small head are holding much sway with the vet and her scales. Over the years, I've spent much more time at home than Ash, and as such, Gucci and I are BFFs. You know, animals are simple like that. Are you here the most? Yes. Do you feed me? Yes. Then you get to be my favourite human slave. Gucci had me wrapped around her paw, hence the slight paunch she was carrying. I figured she'd had 2 litters and a misspent youth. She deserved to be fat and happy and as lazy as she wants to be. Plus, she couldn't escape the garden this way. Every time she tried to scale the fence, all the weight would sink to her bum, robbing her of any momentum and saving me from fretting about her taking on the busy road out front. A busy road is good for flag visibility, bad for house cats. But recently, I'd noticed a little extra weight on Gucci. And as I sat and fussed her one night, I found a lump. I checked her over and she had more than one or two. So I googled it and I messaged some of my more knowledgeable borderline vet contacts. No matter which way I looked at it, the information kept coming back like it always does when you ask the internet a medical question. It was cancer. But what else could it be, I searched. Oh, a different type of cancer. I started looking into the possible treatments and everything I read was horrible. Success rates were low, treatment was not simple, and it sounded painful. On top of that, it was going to be expensive. I called some more people in the know, got some other opinions. I'm sentimental, but I'm also pragmatic. I wanted as much information as possible before I talked to Ash about this, because I knew what Ashley's answer would be. She'd throw money at the situation. And I wasn't so sure it was fair to put Gucci through a world of painful treatments and reduce her quality of life, and then lose her anyway. I figured I'd keep an eye on Gucci for a little while before I decided what to do. And you know, if Ash brings it up before then, we'll deal with it. Gucci is probably glad we were away for that weekend, and her only human interaction would be with a drop-in feed-in, because I may have been fussing the heck out of the fluffy little bugger. But away we go. It's roller derby, of course, and one of the treats of being in the bottom league is that you end up with opponents hundreds of miles away, this time in Wales. It was game day meets an epic road trip. We booked a shed load of rooms in an unsuspecting bed and breakfast and descended upon a mid-sized Welsh town. We arrived the night before and we're not a million miles from a seaside resort I used to visit as a kid. Friday night fish and chip dinner on the beach, I suggest to everyone. Mila decides that you can't go on a beach without going in the sea. It might be summer, but it's still a little fresh. Mila insists, and the next thing you know, she's in her underwear. I'm admiring her resilience to the cold, but I'm getting nowhere trying to point out that the tide is out. Out. It is pitch black, and Mila has set off in search of the sea. For safety reasons, I follow with a towel to prevent hypothermia in the event that we do actually ever reach water. It turns out to be at least a mile or so out, and Mila does in fact get in the sea at last. At least in the dark she can't see how grim the water is. With Team Mermaid satisfied, we actually get a reasonably early night ahead of game day tomorrow. You'll be surprised to know that despite our athletic discipline, we lost. we are in fact very good at losing. So what we did is we celebrated surviving the season with an enormous bottle of champagne provided by our esteemed leader Betty. My mum and dad had even come down to watch me bench coach and were thoroughly impressed by Ashley's ability to bounce off people. My dad had the game figured out and was talking tactics and strategy with me by half time. My mum just wanted to know everyone she'd seen get flattened in the first half was okay. I think she appreciated me being adjacent to the action for once. The season, we decided, deserved a finale, and so we glammed up and went out on the town that night. I was gutted that Betty couldn't stay to party. It meant my drinking buddy for the night will be Mila, which means it's probably gonna get messy in a different kind of way. And it does. It starts with shot. We have set the tone. Mila and I play pool and she loses her bra in a bet. We charmed the bar staff and ended up behind their bar. If they'd been hoping for a quiet night at work, we'd ruined that. And we weren't done with ruining stuff there. Mila and I spotted two women who looked to be on a double date that was going badly. You got the impression that they'd be signalling SOS if they could. So we struck up a conversation with them and the lads who were with them. I don't remember their dates actually leaving, but suddenly we had two very relieved, grateful new friends who insisted we join them at the only other place with any life in it, for karaoke. Well, now Ashley's their best friend. We introduced them to the rest of the team and the girls started swapping war stories about dating boys. Mila and I took this as a signal to hit the bar again. The karaoke was class, especially in comparison to the carnage we were creating elsewhere in the pub. We made friends with everyone, and our single mums were on the prowl. Pat and B were flirting with the locals very successfully. I swear I love mums on tour. All bets are off. They aren't trying to keep someone alive for once. They are free of all responsibilities and they are gonna cut loose. We cleared tables and chairs and created a dance floor. A handsome young man was outfitted with a pair of wedges and then all of a sudden he proceeds to teach us how to slut drop properly. By the time the pub kicks us out, we need an extra taxi to bring the boys Sam, Pat and B have been flirting with back to the B&B. For once, both Ashley and I hit the wall at the same time and we head for bed. And not long after that, it all kicks off. B and Mila must have had too much sugar because these two are tearing in and out of every room that doesn't have a locked door like drunk toddlers, bouncing on beds and just generally causing chaos. The lad who B fancies and has brought back, he's joined in, so there's three of them at it. Ashley somehow is dead to the world and sleeps through this whole thing. Me, I'm listening to the madness echo around the B&B. But we're not done yet. In another room, Sam and Pat are entertaining another lad. Sam is married, but is having a lot of fun flirting. Pat thinks she's onto a winner for the night with this fella. Except, at some point she leaves the room and Sam disappears with her fella. So Pat is now out in the corridors hollering at Sam through a door. B has shacked up with her lad in her room. Only problem there is she's locked a half-dressed Mila out of the room that they were sharing. So Mila joins Pat in hammering on doors and shouting the place down. I lose my temper and I go out to yell at them to shut the hell up. In my anger, I don't put my glasses on, nor do I put a top on. I lean out of the door to yell. Mila yells back. I react, I step out, and I stand at the top of the stairs, half naked from the waist up. Mila is at the bottom of the stairs, naked from the waist down. She explains she's locked out. I tell her, why don't you go and sleep in one of the other rooms that you've managed to open up? Figure it out and stop making it everyone else's problem. Can't fault Mila. As soon as she realises that she could just keep in one of the open rooms they found, off she goes to go to sleep. I go back to the room, which I'm now locked out of. Bollocks. There's no point knocking. Waking Ashley up would require an air horn, and that would be a tad hypocritical after the lecture I've just given Mila. So I curl up in the doorway, hoping to hear if Ash wakes or stirs, and I can knock and get her to let me back in. I am lying on the carpet, freezing my nips off. Pat and Stan are still wandering about and there is some serious arguing going on. I don't think anyone besides Ashley managed an entire night in the same bed. The cold is making it impossible for me to get any kip on the floor, so I try a new approach to waking up Ashley. Just saying her name really quietly under the door over and over again, hoping her brain or her subconscious would eventually pick up on it. And it actually bloody worked. Finally, I got back into the warm bed and vowed to never exit a hotel room topless again. Now, I have availed you of many details that I did not know at the time, and there are more to come, such as what went on with Pat and Sam. But when we all came down for breakfast the next morning, you knew there had been a falling out. Pat was eating breakfast, filling B in on her version of the situation, and Sam is with Mila. Sam is in tears. Her and Pat had rowed something rotten last night, and so Sam just wants to get on a train home. Mila and I try to reconfigure the car seating situation so that Sam doesn't have to do that, but she's having none of it. She just wants to go right now. Even as we're trying to point out how expensive and how long a train home was going to be, she was adamant she was not getting in a car with anyone else. I knew she was dead serious when she booked a ticket there and then. It was a couple of hundred quid by the time she paid for Mila's tickets too. Turned out she didn't want to travel alone, and we didn't really want her to either, and Mila stepped up and went home with her. I had to deal with the furious bed and breakfast owners at checkout. Not one room in their establishment had gone untouched by these animals. They had rampaged throughout the place, relocated a huge number of items, and I did have to reassure them that they were relocated, not stolen. I got such a dressing down for these people, and I was handling it well until the little Welsh old lady housekeeper landed the "I'm so disappointed in you" line. I was taken right back to being a little kid in that moment. I couldn't get out of there fast enough. I'm hungover, I'm chastised, and I'm running on 3 hours of sleep. And for once, I am so glad Ash is fresh-faced after 8 solid hours of sleep and is ready to drive us home. I couldn't face it. I didn't even strap a pair of skates on, but I am exhausted. Weekend of madness. But come training on Wednesday, the team asked me to be their coach full-time. Do the job proper. I'm as pleased as punch when Betty asks me. So pleased I gloss over all of the drama that's just happened and the possible difficulties of being my fiancé's coach. But those, as we know, are future me problems. Worrying about it is just suffering twice. Hello, how's things? I've had a quiet week on the socials, but I will be back on it this coming week. Turns out there is such a thing as too much Instagram. Not to mention I've been busy reading Butcher's A Noun, which finally arrived. You should so read it. I've never felt so seen, so understood, or been so educated about my own experience, and I've only read like the first quarter. I tip my hat to S. Bear Bergman. He wrote an awesome book. I'm off to curl up and read some more. I'll be back next week with another chapter of my own. Don't forget, if you can, leave a review, donate or subscribe, or just follow on Insta. Thanks, as always, for the privilege of your time, and whatever your week brings, I hope it's a good one. Take care.